Okay, first of all, I'm pleased to announce I'm a newly minted member of APHA, so yay. And I'm very pleased to be here because I sit squarely in the interface between public health and mental health. And I'm very pleased that there's a mental health thread here that's as strong and interesting as what I've experienced. I'm also pleased to announce that I am the steward for the Alabama money that came to mental and behavioral health through the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program, and we have a number of representatives from that. And we haven't really had a chance to tell you, but this is such an exciting piece of money that was embedded into a class action lawsuit. Nothing like this has ever been done before, where they set aside some money from a medical settlement that typically goes to people who are directly impacted, like in asbestos, they've been exposed to asbestos, but instead is spread across the Gulf Coast region for all of the communities that have been affected generally by a huge number of disasters. So kudos to BP and the plaintiff's lawyers for putting together something this excited and innovative, and I'm really honored and passionate about being involved. I also want to say that my name is Lang Henriksen Rowling. You may only hear it said right once by me. Even my husband actually gets it wrong here and there. But because of that, most people call me LR. So, and actually, you know, I wish people could cite it that way because then maybe they'd cite me a little bit more because I think I take up too many characters in manuscripts. I would have a long story about Alabama and all the problems that we have. But let me say one of the exciting things is that if Louisiana tells you about their stories, they're the same stories for Alabama. And one thing that Tony mentioned that I think is important to kind of punch to you is that most disaster relief efforts are either located in a specific community or they're given to a state. This is very unique because instead of being vertically organized, we're actually horizontally organized across the coast. And we share so much in common in terms of not having EHRs, having buildings devastated, being flooded out, not having, I mean, we have FQs where they're dipping their x-rays in chemicals and putting them on trucks, trying to get them to the hospital. And whoever manages to bill first gets the money because the hospital does have a portal, so they repeat everything that's done at the FQHC. So, you know, and there's places where there are no EMRs. And really states need to get together and get a unified EMR or EHR because every FQ that we work in uses a different electronic health system with different pieces of portals for mental health and behavioral health. So there's very little communication even amongst FQHCs. But the patients rotate through the same places. So the places, you know, the people are shared, but the FQs still stand alone to a great degree. Okay, all that being said, let's see if I can figure out how to go on. As far as I know, I have no relationships to disclose other than I am married, so I have a marital relationship, longstanding. Quickly to just tell you the outline of my talk is that I want to just briefly review the national levels of integration, some of the national models, just kind of orient you. One of the things that I thought was really exciting about this money, so if you think about my vision for what we could do, is that we're a state that's always 47th, 48th, 49th. We kind of compete with Mississippi. You're 50th, we're 49th. We usually say at least we're not Mississippi, you know, over in Alabama. We've all rejected all kinds of things like Medicaid expansion, you know, so we're often kind of the last to come to anything. Even my friend who's here from California has seen a movie that I desperately want to see. It might be 5 years before we see it where I live, okay? Things, we're slow to pick up things. But this money is really an opportunity. I see it as an opportunity to move us from 49th to 5th. Let's accelerate the change. Let's be in keeping with national models. So I want to talk about the national models that we're kind of building around. I want to give you a very brief description of our plan and process. And if I go on too long, I've asked about 10 people to go like this because it's so exciting what we're doing. And I'm kind of a teacher, so I could tell you too much. I wanted to give you just a brief snapshot of the data that we have about how far we're coming. And then I'm going to just show you two slides to show you some of our other successes that we're really proud of. And I'm going to show you one slide about our challenges. But I've been to a lot of talks that have highlighted the challenges, so I'm just going to show you and not talk about it. This is a little hard to see, and I'm not going to spend long on it. And in fact, I'm going to clip through it immediately. Because what I'm going to tell you is that SAMHSA has put forward a model that says that there's six levels of integration. And you start with basically your mental health and your physical health providers never meeting each other face-to-face and being in separate facilities. And you move up all the way to where they're in the same system, the patients sit in the same waiting room, the teams are completely together, they deliver care where they know that there's one body, one mind, and they work together effectively. So it moves all the way up there. And in terms of the model that they've laid out, they actually have laid it out that there's really three categories of how you can measure this. One is physical proximity. So how close are we physically together? With, you know, psychology has always known you really don't marry people that you never meet or interact with. You actually marry people that you somehow have proximity to, right? So back to relationships, that's true. The closer you are, the more likely you are to get comfortable and know each other. Communication, how you communicate, very important. And then ultimately, you have to have practice change. And I think that's what my colleague just pointed out. This is a different kind of practice. But it's not just different for your medical people. It's actually a different practice for your mental health providers. It's not an hour-long session where you have 12 weeks to put together something. You may see these people one time. And it may be a very brief interaction. So you have to really boil it down to the evidence-based practices of what can you do quickly. Press the right thing. Okay, so this is a shameless plug for a model that I've been putting together. I call it the triple E model. I used to call it E cubed until last night over a glass of wine. So I had to reload my slides. But it's the triple E model. And basically, if you look at CDC models, you have to have short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals to move your project forward. And I've organized my short-term goals in terms of engagement. And everyone here has already talked about getting into these clinics means relationships and engaging and cultural sensitivity. And it's a very difficult process. And it's a continuous process. So the linear model here really doesn't portray what this looks like. Then you actually have to embed what you're doing inside the clinic, and it has to be a part of that process, that workflow. And then you have to be thinking about how can this endure? You know, how can they embrace this in a way that's really sustainable and enduring? So I just want to talk to you a little bit about stage two, which is the embedding process. But to do that, I have to tell you what we're actually doing. So this is the part where I can go on too long, so be ready to show me. Basically, you have to hire behavioral health providers. And our thought was to seed behavioral health providers, give the money that we've received from GRHOP, pay for them to go into these centers so they don't have to come up with the money. They don't have to see how this works out of their own pocket. They actually can see it work first and then invest in it as they get excited about it. We use a lot of different professionals. We don't have a school of social work. That's been a little impediment for us. We have very few psychiatrists. We're a HRSA-designated shortage area for virtually every mental health person you can think of. We also felt it was really important to train our people in very brief interventions and to train them about the practice characteristics of being in a setting like this. What are these models? And they have to learn a lot about primary care information, like disease indicators and things that we don't train in our schools. So one of our hopefully long-term contributions is that we're putting together a training certificate that really would directly help mental and behavioral health providers know how to work in this newer environment and new fashion. There are a lot of pathways to integrated care. I'm going to highlight two. One is that there are clinical pathways, what they call clinical pathways, where you identify people that have a physical health indicator, and then you funnel them through your behavioral health provider, and you put the one care in that direction. There's also another pathway that people are really advocating for, where you do routine mental health screening. So just like you get your blood pressure checked, you also get your mental health checked, and it happens all the time, and that's how it looks. We went with path two. Okay. Path 2 is a complicated path. There's lots of ways that people can come to the path. We're advocating really to use the PHQ-2, which is a very brief screen for depression and anxiety. And we've been working to have that pop up, have it be on the vital signs page. That's essential. You don't want to click through it and get to it, have it seen. And once those two triggers happen, then it opens up into the PHQ-9, which is the National Indice of Anxiety and Depression in Primary Care. We have taught our providers, I've gone to multiple sessions to teach our providers about what the cutoff scores are, what the workflow plan is, and that doesn't happen once. I do it over and over and over to get a better understanding of what it is that we're doing and what our roles are. Then we actually have, and physicians really understand, a triage plan. Screening and triage, so this is our triage plan. We don't deal with people who have very severe levels of mental and behavioral health or are actively suicidal. They actually use the same procedure that they've always done with those patients. So this is more the moderate, mild level of depression that really has been shown to have a strong impact on your health care. Okay. This is sort of the meat of the talk, which is, okay, so we're doing all this, but it's not going to help the country if we don't actually measure it and show that it works. And so what we developed, and Corey's here, she's my assessment and evaluation coordinator at my center, we decided to develop a measure of what level of integrated care we're at. We looked at some existing measures, and they're all very cumbersome and complex. Our systems are so underserved, they're serving these very difficult populations, they can't do much more than what they're already doing. So what Corey and I did together, really mostly Corey, was pull those indicators down into a very small and specific kind of thing. And we only looked at two categories of indicators, the physical proximity and the communication. And we really built that scale of level 1 all the way to level 6. And we gave it to a lot of different people in our FQHC, multiple levels, to sort of say, where do you think we are? And then we also had one page that had 10 indicators, and we just asked them, is this present or absent? And most of these indicators, they all represent national models of integrated care, but they're more specific to administrative. Like, is behavioral health in your vision statement? Is it in your organizational chart? Do you have policies and procedures? Do people know those policies and procedures? So sort of that level of, is it part of your workflow? Is it embedded into your workflow? And she can give you those measures. Okay, so back to the model. That's what we used. Okay, so here's our data. Basically, we had two main FQHCs that we work with. We have two counties, one on either side of the bay. People talk about it as if they're two different states. There's a bridge, but you know, once you go over the other side, it's totally different, which actually it is culturally. So we have one that primarily serves African-American population, very urban, inner city, and we have an FQHC that has a lot of places that are across the bay and very rural, and a Hispanic population, as well as primarily Caucasian population. But basically, we looked at each thing. Do they have on-site providers? Well, time one, before we started, the levels across, the average across all the different people we assessed on this was level 1, which basically is no, we have nothing. we don't have a shared waiting room. We do have, some people had thought they had kind of a predictable schedule. They had some people who came into the HIV clinic sort of in a predictable way. And there was, some person thought that they kind of had some scheduling things, but basically we're at the bottom level of integration. In our seed clinics a year later, we looked at how much are we changing this? Are we moving up these national levels? And you can see there's just a huge jump. So one of the great things about this money is how much we accelerated change using these instruments and using the money really in the seed personnel. And now there's just this drive. They want, you know, how can we get these people? How can we disseminate this model? And it's coming from them, not from us. Okay, same thing with communication. Pretty much tells you, hey, this same deal's going on, although you can see communication is a little different, difficult, more difficult nut to crack, perhaps, than proximity. And then here are the 10 indices of integration. Again, we have actually the measure that we gave that has these 10 indices. But they're basically things like, do you have policies and procedures? Do you have a referral form? Do you have groups? Do you have strategic planning initiatives? Is this part of your vision? Are your behavioral health people placed on leadership teams? Do you have a director who actually organizing all the services? And we just had them yes or no, and you can see at time one, basically, they had none of these indicators, or, you know, our best clinic had one across all the people we measured. And you can see by the end of year two, you know, we have 3 and 4 of these 10 national indicators. We have, obviously, a long way to go, you know, 3 versus 10. Some would still say that's a pretty underperforming clinic, but when you start at 0, we're pretty impressed with how the progress is going. We have a lot of other amazing outcomes. That, you know, we've had a behavioral health director added to their organizational chart. Our FQHCs are writing grants for behavioral health, and they've asked us to help make that process happen, and we have been collaborating with that. There's internal personnel at the FQHCs who are advocating for changes at the state levels. We actually had a situation where you could not bill for 2 Medicaid visits in the same day. They went to the state and said that's not a federal regulation. Other states are doing it. And we got that policy changed as part of it. There's no integrated health without that. And our FQHC contact made that happen at the state level. It still gives me chills. Continued challenges. I'm not going to dwell on these. It's too negative. Gets me down. There's a lot of continued challenges. This is really hard work. Very, very hard work. I don't think I've ever been in something this complicated with this many systems involved. But you can do it. You can do it. And when you do it, it's tremendous what happens. In conclusion, I'd like to end where I started, which is to just say the benefits of putting this into a class action lawsuit related to challenges of an underserved, under-resourced, horizontal area cannot be overstated. We have these coordinated projects. We target underserved populations, which to me is a passion. We have the Quad State Consortium, and we can share lessons learned and solutions. I've learned as much from my collaborators as I've contributed. I'm pretty sure less contribution on my part, more gifts from them, and, you know, that we do have to figure out ways to get seed money for system change, because these clinics are completely overwhelmed, and they don't have the resources, they don't see the benefit to start, so we have to figure out ways to marshal resources to give them a chance to do this. Thank you very much.